The Tale of the Elf Prince and the Impossible by Wonky Elk, read by CookieMom6067. There is a forest of eternal light, where the only darkness is the cool of shade, and where there is no sickness and only delight. In this forest live many creatures, and they are all, of course, equal, but the elves consider their own equality to have the edge over that of others. They are graceful and lithe. They are wise and noble. They have ears with a characterful point to them. They have stories that take the length of a year to unfold, and when the moonlight hits them just right, they glow like smug and ethereal stars, sending all around them to their knees in praise of their beauty and extrapolated goodness. And what does a deer or a squirrel or a bog sprite have to compare with that? The forest is eternal and set aside from the world so that no mere human can enter. Until one did. Prince John was not exactly a regular elf. He was fair, of course, of face and form, but his ears were not quite pointy enough. His grace of movement did not surpass that of a hunting leopard or a fleeing deer. He never put in the hours required to find just the right shaft of moonlight to bask overwhelmingly in. In short, Prince John was a disappointment. But he was still an elf, and his family forbade him to associate with bog sprites and sentient trees, to go beyond the designated elf neighborhood, or to otherwise bring disgrace on their family. Prince John considered their edicts politely and ignored them all. The wisest and most compassionate person he knew was a bog sprite, and John and Taylor spent hours together exploring the forest, getting far more scuff than any elf had the right to do, and trying to find a way to help John fly, which was one ability that elves, in all their vast superiority, sorely lacked. Still, John enjoyed just watching Taylor as she fluttered her own beautiful but sturdy wings, trying to work out the mathematical principles behind the movement and ignoring the itch that it stirred in his mind. For the forest was endless, and, though it was of course the best and most wonderful of places, it all got a little samey after a while. John's own dreams were of taking to the winds and going with them through zephyr and storm to the places beyond, whatever the troubles and dangers they might bring. It was leaping with a heart set on flying that had brought John another friend when he jumped from one tree to another that was ambitiously far and was caught just as he was resigning himself to a sudden sharp meeting of face and ground by an oak tree with an expression of reserved amusement. Thanks. Don't mention it. Might want to remember that you're not a sparrow, though. Well, I was going for something a little more on the eagle side, but point taken. Ronan was a far more restless tree than most of his kind, and after that he often joined John and Taylor in their perambulations and let them rest in his branches afterwards, when their valiant feet and wings had not been able to keep up with their will to see more, to do more, and to find something new. And then one day, they found it. Well, this is just great. How am I supposed to navigate in a place where the compass refuses to acknowledge the existence of north? The stars are not all where they're supposed to be, and there's not one signpost anywhere. Neither John, Taylor, nor Ronan had seen this sort of creature before, and they were all rather struck by him. Ronan noted how, when he walked, he made more noise than even the most crashing of trees, with a mere fraction of the mass. Taylor noted how he frowned and fidgeted and had peace very far from his heart. John noted how his face, at first a little plain by an elf's standards, became more interesting the more you gazed at it, and how he brimmed with energy from his blazing eyes to his snapping fingers. The creature took longer to notice them than they did him, but when he did, he leapt back in alarm. His gaze rested on Ronan in particular, though it kept flicking to John, as if pulled by some annoying but irresistible force. Hello? Oh, God, you don't eat people, do you? because I have serious allergies, which probably means that I'm fatal when ingested. I'm a tree. We're not noted for being carnivores. The new creature let out a sigh of relief, which was amusingly heartfelt. Right, right, you photosynthesize and so forth. He allowed his gaze to take a closer look at Taylor and John, widening his eyes at Taylor's wings, but still lingering on John for the longest, before going back to the instruments in his hands, which were apparently annoying him. So, do any of you happen to know the way out of this forest? Because I might have got a little lost on the turning somewhere. They looked at each other. There is no way out of the forest. Taylor was gentle, sensing that this would not be welcome news. She was waved away impatiently. Well, obviously there's a way out of the forest. I came into the forest, therefore I can get out again. I just seem to have lost my bearings a little. And my stars. These are definitely not my stars. And he gazed up at the sky with an expression so lost and longing that Prince John was struck by a sudden inexplicable urge to enfold the creature in his arms and give him a home within himself forever and ever. I am Prince John of the Elves, and this is Taylor of the Bog Sprites and Ronan Oak Tree. Perhaps it would be best if we took you back to my people and asked if they could help. The creature sighed irritably. Yes, yes, I suppose. Do they have food? The creature, whose name it turned out was Rodney, trudged on after them for a few minutes, complaining about tree roots at intervals and getting oddly but endearingly distracted by very ordinary firebirds and mushroom houses before it occurred to him to say thank you. But Prince John found that he didn't mind at all. The elf court was not pleased. They were not pleased with Prince John's unseemly wanderings. They were not pleased with his unworthy friendships with his lesser equals. And they were especially not pleased with a strange thing called Rodney, who should absolutely, by no means, have been able to have entered the forest, and whom they would gladly kick straight out again, except that all their wisdom failed them when it came to exactly how. The forest has no end and no beginning. It has no entrance and no exit. It is impossible for you to be here, and it is impossible for you to leave. Yes, well, that's all very helpful, except that I am here, so evidently, you're all of you talking through your delicately moonlit asses. The elf court was really, really, really not pleased. But violence was not a concept allowed to even drift as a stray thought on the forest air, so all that they could do was offer the stranger their stiff hospitality and to try and ignore his existence as best they could. Prince John was a little more accommodating. He showed Rodney how to bed down in the soft, cool mosses and how to drink water from the curl of the morning leaves. He showed him where the finest berries grew and the tastiest stems and nuts, and how to tell the sentient plant life from the non-sentient so as to avoid embarrassment and inappropriate touching. Prince John took Rodney with him on his walks with Rona and Taylor and told him of his life here and his dreams of freedom and flight. In return, Rodney spoke of the world from which he came, which was confusing and messy and quite possibly broken and terrifying and enthralling all at once, and his own love of making and learning and trying new things, and something called a Ph.D., which he had been working on, before getting distracted by the experiment which had landed him in this place, an accident which Rodney seemed less and less upset about with each passing day. And on some days, they went out without Ronan or Taylor, and they lingered by the deep, clear pools and at the places where the fireflies darted and made patterns in the sky, and on one of those days their hands met with a kind of newness and wonder, and their lips followed, and they found a hollow and very much non-sentient tree to nestle into together. From then on, Rodney stopped talking quite so much about finding his way home. In retrospect, they should have said nothing. But John was a prince, and princes, even disappointing ones, had obligations. There were 47 separate protocols that had to be gone through before he could marry, and a great deal of stiff clothing to be worn, and official feasts and announcements and ceremonies. But it seemed that he was to be spared all of these because the elf court, which consisted of John's mother and father and brother and the royal advisor, who said little but disapproved much, flat out refused to let Prince John marry Rodney. Rodney wasn't an elf. He was neither graceful nor polite. The moonlight was far more likely to highlight the shadows under his eyes, his rounded ears, or his slightly crooked mouth, than it was to give him any unearthly charm. Ethereal was a term which could only be applied to him by way of a descriptor of everything he wasn't. And most of all, he was an impossibility and an affront to the wisdom of elves, who hadn't accounted for him, and therefore despised him, with every fiber of their upright beings. John could not marry Rodney, and that was that. "Yeah, about that." John put his arm defiantly around Rodney's waist. "I think I'm just going to go ahead and marry him anyway." But the elf court became frosty and summoned all the elf clan to the great meeting place where John was making his petition. John and Rodney were each seized by four strong elves, and they were torn from each other and held at a distance, their bodies leaning in hopelessly towards their lover. "The creature Rodney shall be banished to the northern side of the forest and not suffered to leave it. His royal and superior highness Prince John shall be confined to the southern end and not permitted to venture further, and there shall be no more nonsense about marriage." John cried out and fought with all his strength as Rodney was taken away, but he could no more break the hold on him than he could will his body to fly. It was long before he stopped watching the place where Rodney had disappeared into the trees. For some time, John tried to find a way through to the north. No one hurt him, but he found that his path was always blocked by elves, by trees, by sad but stubborn creatures who followed the elves' will because that was what they knew. And with each day without Rodney, John became sadder and quieter and more angry, but with no outlet for his anger, so that he felt like a frozen block of ice around a trapped and frustrated molten core. He ceased to speak, and he ceased to do his princely duties, and he ceased to do much of anything except retreat into his mind where he might find the secret of flight and swoop over the elves and the trees and the everything over to where Rodney was. And the court of elves grew troubled, and there were whispers that a hint of darkness and trouble had entered the forest, and the elves cursed the stranger who had brought it and wished him 100 feet underground with separating boils for good measure. There were petitions from many of the forest creatures to just let the lovers be happy already, but the elf court stood firm. His royal and superior highness Prince John would marry an elf and not an annoyance, and that was all there was to it. And the king of the elves was just explaining this in no uncertain terms to the most frustratingly stubborn and persistent of these petitioners, Taylor Bogsprite and Ronan Oaktree, when his footing became uncertain and the ground suddenly shifted and knocked him right over on his elegant derriere. A strange, muddy creature popped its head out of the hole and blinked like an oversized mole, and was immediately pulled out and hugged by Prince John, who had unfrozen in an instant. "I can't believe you actually tunneled all the way here." "Actually, it turns out that this forest harbors a lot of disturbingly large, burrowing creatures. Did you know that some of the rabbits in the north come in size cow? So it was just a matter of fashioning some tools and linking up some of the networks and, well, I am a genius after all." "Seize him!" The king of the elves was less interested in the relative sizes of the northern and southern varieties of rabbit than in getting Rodney the hell out of his sight. But he and the elf guards who strutted importantly forth suddenly stopped short, as all of that molten lava inside Prince John seemed to flare out of him like a halo. John gripped Rodney tight and turned eyes that were suddenly full of the promise of fireballs on everyone who came near. "You're not taking him." And then the king and queen both flared out too, and there was a moment when it seemed that an unthinkable concept might spark and kindle into devastating life, after all, and that whatever the result of the conflict, the forest would never be the same. And then the royal advisor stood and cleared his stuffy throat. I believe there might be some precedent for this situation. And they all turned to stare at the advisor, all fury derailed for a moment. In the case of a royal heir desiring a mate deemed unsuitable by the royal incumbents, it is traditional to ask them to perform 3 tasks of great difficulty. Should they achieve the tasks, then their worth is established, and none can deny the marriage. And if they fail? The advisor coughed in a most un-elf-like fashion. Then they must leave the forest by whatever means they have at their disposal. But there is no way to leave the forest. Taylor had moved over to defend the lovers, and now she crossed her arms and flapped her wings angrily. Ronan glowered and loomed beside her. The advisor looked Rodney in the eye. There is one way, and you must agree to abide by the rules or forfeit the right to make the challenge. Rodney, you don't have to. But Rodney shook his head. Yes, I do. And when I pass the stupid tasks, then we can be together without all of this nonsense. And without destroying the heart of this place, is what he didn't say. But they felt the knowledge between them, and John slowly nodded, duty and conscience warring with love and putting it gently aside. Then it is agreed. The court retired for a short while to discuss the setting of tasks, and John took the opportunity to both kiss Rodney desperately and to brush off as much of the mud as he could manage. Taylor added a little bog sprite magic, and soon he was clean and spruce, except for being a little disheveled around the cuffs and elbows. They hadn't long for the kissing and the tidying up before the court returned with smug looks on their faces that both Rodney and John immediately determined to metaphorically smack into next week. But John reluctantly allowed himself to be collected into the royal clutches for the sake of peace and his forest, while Taylor and Ronan stood by Rodney. The first task is to count all of the stars in the sky. You have until tomorrow morning to complete the task, or you will fail the challenge. What? That's impossible. John stood up, with his fury rising again, as Taylor and Ronan stiffened angrily next to Rodney, prepared to argue. But the advisor stood too and crossed his arms with finality. The challenge has been accepted, and must be either fulfilled or failed by tomorrow's sunrise, or you leave the forest. John was about to protest again, but Rodney just nodded, a stiff little nod, like he had been expecting something of the sort. Okay, then. Rodney rested his gaze on John for a moment as if taking strength from the sight, and gave him the ghost of a smile, and then he turned and left, Taylor and Ronan close beside him. Rodney's dignity and defiance were evident in every step until he got to a difficult tree root, after which he limped heavily for a time. I'm fine. It's okay. I'm fine. Ow. Okay. That stings a bit. And John vowed that whatever happened, nothing would split them apart. For if Rodney had to leave the forest, and he could see only one way in which that could be done, then John was going to leave with him. Punctually, at sunrise, Rodney returned. He faced the elf court with equanimity. So, creature Rodney, did you count the stars? Just Rodney is fine, you know. You can quit all the creature business. And yes, I have. The advisor raised an eyebrow, but he inclined his head in a nod. And how many are there? 1 septillion, 12 sextillion, 12 quintillion, 13 quadrillion, 25 trillion, 12 billion, 15 million, 22,005. Here, I can show you my workings. First, you have to calculate. Rodney showed them his workings until the sun was halfway to noon, by which time the heads of all the elves were very heavy and their eyelids strangely prone to an ungraceful droop. Just as Rodney's enthusiastic explanation reached what he called the really interesting part, his gestures undiminished in vigor by the passing of time, the advisor shook off his torpor and jumped in with a slight air of desperation. Enough! I mean, thank you, Rodney, for your dedication to the task. The royal court pronounces it a pass. The king and queen of the elves glared and scowled, but they were not willing to endure more mathematics, so they accepted the ruling without objection. And now the second task. In the heart of the forest, there is a clearing containing 7 standing stones, the legacy of our ancestors in the far-off and long-ago times. For your next challenge, you must make the stones weep. John clenched his fists. Are there any actual rules governing the setting of these tasks? Because it's looking pretty much like a fix to me. That is the challenge. The advisor turned to Rodney brusquely. Do you accept it? Yes, yes, stones, weeping, check. Challenge accepted. At sunrise tomorrow, then. Rodney turned towards John, and they exchanged looks of love so searing that the air between them crackled and fainted away, and then he walked away, Ronan and Taylor by his side, and carefully steering him past the roots this time. Just before sunrise, the entire elf population, and possibly that of the whole forest, crowded into and outside of the clearing with an air of excitement that was unabated by the impossibility of the task. Oddly, the firebirds were already there, and blankets had been hung around and over the trees in the clearing so that it was very dark and very hot. Wooden bowls of water stood around at intervals, steaming gently and making it awkward to find a place to step, but most squeezed in somewhere. In the center of the clearing sat Rodney with an odd-looking wooden construction. It was tall and long and held a row of thin black and white rectangles just by Rodney's fingers. The finish was rough and hasty, and Prince John detected a little bog sprite magic in the construction and some of Ronan's way with wood. He gave them small smiles of gratitude, and they nodded in return. Rodney didn't say anything. He just took a breath, flexed his fingers, and then began pressing the rectangles, his fingers flowing over them like a sparkling stream that moves fast and then slow, in alternation as it travels along to the sea. Beautiful but mournful, music rose from his fingers and hung heavy and pressing in the air. And John felt all of the sadness of their forbidden love hit him all at once, and he couldn't stop the tears from coming to his eyes. All around him there were sobs and sniffles and slow hitches of breath, and people clutched each other and gathered closer despite the heat, as they were all engulfed in a wave of utter sadness. Even the court shed a collective tear. They were so overcome that they almost didn't notice the moisture forming on the stones, as they too appeared to weep in sympathy. As the sun began to rise, Rodney ceased his music and looked up at John, who looked back, his own love, with all his force. Nothing could stop him believing now. The advisor sniffled a little and then got his voice back. The royal court pronounces it a pass, but there is one more task to go, and if it has failed, then the challenge is failed. Rodney waved his hand impatiently at the advisor. Yes, I believe that's been fully established. Last task, please. The advisor glanced at the king and queen, took a deep breath, and squared his shoulders. The final task is to make the royal prince fly. John's heart underwent some acrobatics as he simultaneously calculated the impossibility of such a thing, with the way that Rodney had been smashing the impossible so far, and the sheer unutterable joy of the idea. He gave the advisor a quick glance, but couldn't read his countenance at all, nor guess whether this task had been set specifically to please him or to hurt him, all the more painfully when it failed. Rodney just looked intrigued. Huh. I assume that you mean physically rather than emotionally, because if you can accept a metaphorical flight, then John really likes this thing I could do with my... Maybe don't go into that right now, Rodney. Prince John let a little of his inner lava slip, and Rodney coughed and looked guilty. Right, sorry, probably not so much with the being public and all. The advisor fought down his blush and resumed an impassive sternness. The flight must be physical, and it must be sustained for at least 200 breaths. Do you accept? Well, obviously. I'm hardly likely to make the effort to count every single star and to make stones sob their heart out and then say, hey, you know what? I'm done. The advisor ground his delicate pearly elf teeth, but he nodded. At sunrise, then. Wait a minute, though. The advisor raised an impatient eyebrow. What is it, creature Rodney? I said you don't need to call me. Oh, right, it's deliberate, isn't it? Yes, well, color me hurt by your cruel name-calling. My delicate constitution, slashed to the quick. Woe is me. But anyway, in order to make John fly, I kind of need John. The king stalked over before the advisor could speak and skewered Rodney with a hard stare, or tried to. Rodney was looking more fidgety than skewered, like he was either bursting to get on with things or bursting for other reasons that he required a non-sentient tree and some privacy for. Absolutely not. You must pass the challenges alone. Rodney opened his mouth to argue, but John got in first, tired of forcing himself to be passive here in order not to destroy everything he grew up with in a burst of fiery rage. Okay, first, that was not explicitly stated in the challenges, and therefore is pretty much invalid as an objection. And two, making me fly without actually involving me cannot be considered a fair challenge on any level, even with the insanely stacked deck you're playing from. So, you either need to let me go with Rodney, or the task should be declared null and void, and Rodney made the winner by default. The king waved this off in scorn. Nonsense! You will come with me now, and... And all of the elves and the other species that had managed to make it inside the clearing stepped between John and the king. Ronan moved forward, deliberately allowing his roots to shake the ground. Prince John goes with Rodney. There were nods all around, both tentative and firm, and a general muttering about fairness that gradually rose in volume until the advisor shouted, "Enough!" so loudly and fiercely that Rodney jumped a foot, and even the king was cowed. In the interest of fairness, the creature Rodney has permitted the use of Prince John for this task, but the couple are to give their sacred word that they will return here before sunrise. I give my solemn word. John put all of his honor and dignity into the words, a vow that he wouldn't break even for love. Right, me too. Come on, John. We've got work to do. If we're going to get you airborne in a day, that's going to take... and we'll need more wood, of course. John draped his arm over Rodney as they walked away and felt the last of his worries disappear. This was going to work. And it was going to be fun. What wasn't so fun was that after an initial embrace and one long, long lingering kiss, Rodney got straight down to work without even a quickie in the bushes. But there was quite a lot riding on this, so John squashed down his disappointment and focused on what Rodney was doing. Now first we have to work out how heavy you are. Oh, I know that already. This is something I've been thinking about for years. John laid out his calculations for Rodney, and they both studied Tayla as she flew for them, flapping fast and then as slow as she could, so they could map the shape and pattern of her wings and her flight. And then Rodney discussed wood and canvas with Ronan, and John worked on the equations he always had running in his head, and then together they ran the numbers and roughed out the size and the shape of the wings they would need. It wouldn't work at home, but the wood here is different, enchanted somehow, and elves are apparently lighter than they look, so here, if we just change this shape a little and make that larger... The planning took so long that John was worried that they wouldn't have time to actually construct the wings. But Rodney's hands were swift and very accurate, and John, Ronan, and Tayla all helped with the sawing and the sewing and the binding of the shapes into true and functional wings, so that a little before sunrise, John stood in all his unwieldy glory before the court of elves and all those in the forest who hadn't overslept after their last early rising, or got stuck too far at the back to see. He gave Rodney one glance and a smile, and then he flapped his new-made wings, and then John soared. The forest below him was silent with awe and appreciation as John climbed across and up into the sky for the space of more than 200 breaths, then came down slowly and with the last gasp of moonlight bathing him in ethereal light, before the first rays of sun took over and cast him in fire and gold. And when he touched down, no one said a word for 20 breaths. Then the advisor stepped forward. "The royal court?" He glanced at the king and queen, apparently in case of objections, but there were none. "The royal court pronounces a pass. The tasks have all been completed satisfactorily, and these two are therefore married and may not be sundered by elven or other decree." There was a loud and spontaneous cheer, punctuated by the odd query as to whether that meant they didn't get a wedding feast, and Rodney's complaining that his eardrums had split, and ow, there was no need to hug him so hard, you demented vegetable. Splinters, splinters! John had to shed his gorgeous but unwieldy new wings to get to Rodney, but he did so without hesitation, and they kissed the kiss of a couple on their wedding day, and there was much loud cheering again, but this time Rodney was too occupied to complain. There had been a feast in the end. The elves did these things properly, and there was an official ceremony, and the stiffest of clothing, and food available from sunrise to sunrise for the entire forest. And then the couple were finally allowed their wedding night, which they slept through completely exhausted. In fact, Rodney slept for nearly 2 days, having had 3 whole tasks worth of sleep deprivation, but they made up for it with a honeymoon by the clearest forest lakes and in the most secret and mossiest hollows. And when they had thoroughly reminded themselves of how well their bodies fit together, they returned to court for a while, where John's family nodded at them uncomfortably and tried their best to pretend that Rodney was really an elf, which was a hard thing to pretend, and gave them headaches that were very nearly visible. And John loved his home, and, to some extent, because he was a dutiful son and had had them for quite a while, his parents, and he loved his friends, and of course Rodney more than life, but he found that the addition of wings, though it lent exactly the joy to his life he had always imagined, also opened up a larger longing within him. One night he spoke of this to his husband. "Hmm? Oh, yes, well, of course, we're not going to stay here all the time. I've been thinking about what the advisor said about there being one way out of the forest. You know, at first I thought he meant..." Rodney mimed a hand cutting his throat very vividly, and John shuddered, remembering how close he had come to believing that that would indeed be their shared fate. "And then I realized that, look, here's my original experiment, and I just need to essentially reverse it, but with a little more control this time, and a few substitutes for materials, and there's magic now, which is obviously just physics gone a little peculiar, so I can work with that. Taylor's been giving me some tips, and I reckon I'll be a master magician before you know it, and there we are. So what do you think?" John blinked and rewound the conversation to see what he might have missed. "What do I think to what exactly?" Rodney looked at him with that exasperation fringed with love that John had gotten very used to by now. "To leaving the forest. Honestly, John, if I didn't already know that you had a brain that was not completely ossified under all that hair and pointy ears, I'd be worried." "You mean you can really leave?" "We can leave. And Taylor and Ronan too, if they want to. Though we'd have to be careful where we go with them, because, well, back at my home, for example, there'd be collywobbles all over the place, but we don't have to go back there. We're in an infinite forest, John. There must be infinite everywhere to go to." Prince John considered this, the vastness of everything unfolding before him like a treasure map, positively riddled with X's. But duty, always such a killjoy, gave him a sharp nudge. "But we could come back. I am kind of the prince here, and I think I might be kind of fond of the place." And indeed, now that John had the prospect of leaving the forest, it was rapidly changing its aspect from chafing prison to true and beloved home. "Of course, and I have a certain fondness for it myself, particularly some parts." And they revisited some of those parts as they made plans for a future which was quite as broad and as free as a lonely young elf had ever dreamed of. And it was not many days later that Prince John, Taylor Bogsprite, Ronan Oaktree, and the creature Rodney joined hands and took to the winds. The end.